This is the FCS Report Podcast, where we bring you the full report on all things pertaining to FCS football. The FCS Report Podcast is available wherever you find your podcasts. Welcome to today's show. I'm Jay Holloway. I'm a play-by-play broadcaster in the SWAC and Big Sky conferences since 2019. I hope that you'll stick around for future episodes every week on Mondays and Thursdays. We provide you weekly recaps from the previous week in the FCS and also our games week that we'll preview for the following week. We'll have interviews with coaches and players and broadcasters that pertain to FCS programs during each part of a 2025 season. Now, we begin this podcast a couple of weeks into the season. We're in week one going into week two, but there have been some news up to this current point. Number one, a lot of coaching changes, and you would have thought that there would have been some at the more cream of the crop programs. That was not the case. Number one being Brett Vegan staying at Montana State another year. He could have left after an undefeated campaign, but fell short to the Mighty Bison in Frisco, Texas, North Dakota State for another national championship for the team from Fargo. But he stays. More on the Bobcats later on in this podcast. But there were some surprises that we want to make note of. Number one, Tennessee State. Eddie George, the longtime Hall of Famer from Ohio State and Tennessee Titan. He's at Bowling Green now. So just up the interstate from Nashville to lower part of Kentucky in Bowling Green. And, you know, it was a very quick process for him, but it looks to be promising for the one-time Tennessee Titan / Tennessee Oiler now making the reins in the FBS level. Bob Nielsen at South Dakota retired on January 16th, and he's been replaced by his defensive coordinator, Travis Johansson. This was kind of a surprise for me, but it's not a surprise to most. If you know South Dakota State, this is now their third head coach in 5 years. You have Dan Jackson now running the show up in Brookings, South Dakota. He replaces Jimmy Rogers, who's now on the farm in Pullman, Washington, at Washington State. The man who came before him, Jason Eck, who was at Idaho the past couple of years, is now at the head coach at New Mexico. So Jason Eck, who basically flipped South Dakota State to Idaho, Idaho to Mexico State. So it's been a good run for Jason Eck, and now Timmy Rogers getting a Power 5 job in the defunct Pac-12, used to be Pac-12 member, Washington State. Some other news, not surprising here. Sacramento State had a really tough year in the Big Sky. They were 3-9. This is the post-Troy Taylor regime. They did not look good. They lost their last five games under Andy Thompson. He's now on the Stanford coaching staff with Frank Reich. And you bring in head coach of the Hornets now, Brandon Marion from the Go-Go offense from UNLV. More on him in our recap games in a few minutes from now. Going to the SWAC conference, in the Delta, Mississippi Valley State has a new head coach. It's Terrell Buckley, who came from the Orlando Guardians of the UFL. And we'll see what he can do in the SWAC, and that's going to be a tough job in the Delta. They were last in the SWAC conference last year. And Delaware State, as you may saw on your phone notifications in the offseason, Deshaun Jackson replaces Lee Hole, a one-time California Golden Bear and a multiple-year Pro Bowler in NFL. And also at Norfolk State, the obvious one is Michael Vick, who replaced Dawson Odoms in late November. A nice surprise in Nichols in Thibodaux, Louisiana. Tim Rabaut retired, and Tommy Rybacki takes the helm, and he made his presence felt in the first week on the job as a head man in Louisiana. Also, more on them in a few minutes from now. There's some other notable changes. You had Tremaine Jackson, who's at Valdosta State for several years, now at Prairie View. He had a nice opening game weekend for him, and the Panthers, they beat their rivals, Texas Southern, at the buzzer in Houston. Northern Iowa, Todd Sepsis is the head coach for Northern Iowa. Now, as we move along into our recaps, we want to highlight a couple of games, but I want to start with a game that was not on anyone's schedule for week one, that wasn't going to make, you know, top-tier news, but I do think there is an importance to talk about it, because there is a slight gap between the FCS and the FBS, but it's not as big as it once was. Yes, we know there's a scholarship difference between both levels of football programs, between the FBS and FCS. I agree with you. However, if you are the right team that has the right set of players and everything happens to work out on any given Saturday, you have a chance against some of the lower tier FBS programs. Why do you say that? Well, this past weekend, you had Robert Morris from the NEC Conference from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. They took a 77-mile drive to Morgantown, West Virginia to play the West Virginia Mountaineers. Their first time ever meeting this team, playing them. The return of Rich Rodriguez, who has some FBS ties as well, his second stint back in Morgantown. He was also at Jacksonville State when they transitioned to the FBS level for a cup of coffee. And in this game, the spread was a plus 38. However, at the break, it was 10-3 West Virginia. Now, you may say that score is meaningless. Well, not really. Robert Morris was able to limit a high-powered, high-tempo offense to 10 points because of forced fumbles. In the first half, West Virginia had 7 offensive series. Over half of those drives resulted in a fumble. Their opening drive down the field, 10 plays, 81 yards, they scored. Okay, you're at home, you're supposed to do that. The next five drives, the football was on the turf. 3 of those possessions were recovered by the Colonials of Robert Morris. Now, what's the significance of that? Robert Morris, defensively in 2024, was dead last in the NEC in turnovers. In 12 games in 2024, they forced 3 fumbles. They forced 4 of them in the first half. In one game. The only issue was they could not convert on the mistakes of West Virginia. The key point of that game was third down. In the first quarter, the Colonials were 3 for 5. They were moving the ball. They were within a possession of West Virginia. They were right there with, they were hanging tough. The next 8 third down opportunities, they went 0 for 8. 0 for 2 on fourth down. So on third and fourth downs, you were a combined 0 for 10. That will not get it done when you're playing a FBS team. on the road, mind you, in enemy territory, you have to find a way to extend drives because West Virginia is going to score their points. They scored 45 going away. They scored 35 straight in the second half, and that was all she wrote, a 45-3 final. However, if you're able to score, you put pressure on the opposing team and it makes them sweat. And West Virginia was sweating. It wasn't that hot in Morgantown, but you could see 50,000 people moaning and groaning and being concerned about a team from West Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So there was a possible upset in week one that probably should have happened if Robert Morris was able to make West Virginia think about their offensive attack more efficiently. Now let's go to the Blue Bloods, the reigning national champions, North Dakota State. They began their season on the road for the first 2 weeks. Their first opponent was the Citadel in a rainy, humid Charleston, South Carolina. And you had Tim Polasek in his second year at the helm. And you had a brand new quarterback replacing Cam Miller for the last 3 years in the shotgun. It's Cole Payton. Now, Cole Payton was their backup quarterback for the last 3 years. He was their glorified extra runner back there to give Cam Miller a break. And his first half against Citadel was a little shaky. Now, granted, it was raining. It was not a great playing surface, but against a lower tier Citadel team, the passing attack did not look impressive. That was not why they won the game. It was a scoreless first quarter. You had three straight three and outs for both teams. And North Dakota State kind of looked a little lost offensively. The running game looked okay, but the passing game was very much off schedule. However, second quarter begins. You get a big play from Cole Payton on the ground. It leads to a 25-yard pass through the air, and that was all she wrote. 38 points later, it's 3-0. Bison on the road, week one, no problem. Trying to go back-to-back for number 11 in Fargo. And you do have some key returners offensively. Brika Penu and Lance out on the outside of the receiver position, who had 17 receiving touchdowns last year. And I think if you want to see the Bison be effective again to go back-to-back, the air attack has to be a threat. You can't rely upon your senior tailback and your running game every game. I mean, you can because you're North Dakota State, but if you have a little bit of balance, it almost makes them unbeatable. 11 offensive starters returning. Your defense is as smooth as a well-oiled machine. 8 returners there. If the offense has balance, I don't really see who could give North Dakota State any concerns, whether in league play or even to the playoffs. Now, going to which was the game of the week in week one was in Brookings, South Dakota. South Dakota State, number 2 team against number 16 team, Sacramento State. We had mentioned earlier in the program about the new head coach for both teams. You had Dan Jackson, a former linebacker, in his first time calling the shots for the Jackrabbits. And you had Brennan Marion from UNLV and his go-go offense now going to the Sacramento area and trying to revamp a tough program that went 3-9 the previous year. And you could say the offense was a no-go. You had Jalen Rashada, the Georgia transfer, and he had a tough time getting the offense going via the air from his right arm. And he began the game passing 3 for his first 10 completions. And he was 0 for his first 7 before his first completion. And that was a concern for Coach Mann because they rely upon getting the ball in the air and moving. And the offense was very much stagnant through the first 15 minutes of play in South Dakota. Now, granted, it was a long flight, and I'm sure that was a tough place to play in week one for you, but a lot of expectations for the Hornets, and game one was not their best showing offensively. However, defensively was a really nice performance from their defensive line for the Hornets. They had a team-high 7 sacks. 7 sacks, all from their defensive line. So they had a 4-man front, and 4 guys got home early and often. And they made the Jackrabbits struggle. Now, granted, they had over 200-plus yards on the ground, so the air raid was not air raiding in Brookings, South Dakota, but you did see a nice bright spot for the Hornets going forward as you get into Big Sky play. If the offense is a little bit shaky, you do have a defense that can get you some stops, that gets you the ball back, which can help provide confidence to your high-tempo offense. So that's something to be mindful of if you're the Hornets. You do have a good showing from your front four, which is always a critical thing for a high-tempo offense. Can your defense get stops to help your offense get into a better rhythm? On the flip side, for Dan Jackson, you could say it wasn't their best performance at home. And yes, I understand that the Jackrabbits are very much a physical team. They want to be dominant up front. They want to make you make mistakes. I hear you. I do. But just running the ball 56 times for 240 yards will not win every game for you. That's not always the ideal recipe for success. It will in league play. It might do it in the first, second round of FCS playoffs, but there are going to be some teams, North Dakota State and the Dakota Marker game, that will make you pass the football. And you have to beat opponents down the field passing the football. The upset of the week actually came the week before, in week 0. You had University of Incarnate Word. This is 2-3 years post-Cam Ward and Lindsey Scott, and you're in the top 10 in 2025. You had a decent year in 2024, and you're going to Thibodaux, Louisiana. New head coach for the Colonels, and a 2-touchdown scoring favorite. And Incarnate Word scores a whopping 6 points against Nichols. That was a huge win. Nichols was not supposed to be much of anything coming out of the Southland Conference. But their defense showed up. Their defense was a tremendous showing for Tommy Rybacki. And you see why they made him the head coach, because he drew up a terrific scheme. You saw Incarnate Word look off schedule the entire night. A big upset for him. But another game that was really good to watch that I was able to take a look at was somewhat of a surprising team in some people's eyes, but not if you're in Texas. Tarleton State. They're from the United Athletic Conference, the glorified WAC conference. And the Texans, under their second stint of their head coach, was able to get a nice win on the road against Army. against the Black Knights, and you had a back and forth performance in Western New York, a 30-27 win in two overtimes for Coach Witten's group, and they are resilient. There were five lead changes, three ties. They never led till the fourth quarter with 5 minutes to go in the game, and they were able to force two missed field goals by Dawson Jones that would have gave Army either the lead or the win. And Tarleton State is undefeated through week one. But a really impressive win for them, and they had a really good campaign last year. They were a 10-win team last year in 2024, looking to go back-to-back 10-win campaigns for Coach Witten over in Stevensville, Texas. Moving along to the runner-up, Montana State. They were on the road against the mighty Oregon Ducks, and I understand this is the post-Tommy Mellott era, and that era is now, you know, finished. The reigning Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, Player of the Year in FCS, first team All Big Sky, All American quarterback. I understand. 59-13 loss at Oregon, which was somewhat expected, but maybe not that much of a defeat. But there was a significance to that game that Coach Brent Vegan mentioned in the post game press conference on Saturday and on Monday, was the significance of they were not able to hear the plays coming in. Reason being, in the FCS, it was made official in the offseason, all FCS programs are able to have a player communication device within their helmets for your offense and defensive selected person, i.e. your quarterback or middle linebacker, can now receive communications from the coaching staff up until 15 minutes on the play clock on each side of the ball now in the FCS. And Coach Vegan said it was so loud in Eugene that they couldn't even hear the plays come in, which led to not getting off the ball fast enough because they weren't getting the plays in time, which is a significant part of Montana State's offense, is getting the play in. And I know that sounds small, but that is a big change, and especially going to louder environments like a Montana State or going to the Fargo Dome or the Uni Dome or, you know, pick your poison. Idaho State, if you win there, having better years, hostile environments, you're able to manage that. But Montana State is going to have a transition ahead. New quarterback. They're still ground and pound. And a key stat that was evident in that Oregon defeat was, as a team, they rushed for a team low 46 yards. That can be all that's said there. Another surprise that I saw throughout the FCS, again, going back to the Big Sky, was UC Davis. They were picked to be top 10 for another alma mater. A player going to his alma mater was head coach Tim Plout. And Tim Plout, second year at UC Davis, was playing Dan Hawkins. And they had a great performance against Mercer on the road in the FCS kickoff game in week zero. But that was basically a no-show because of very bad weather. They went to week one to Utah to play Utah Tech in St. George, and UC Davis barely got a win in enemy territory. They had to score 24 points in the second half to win by a touchdown. They did not look good. They did not look good at all. You could say frustrating performance. Caden Pinnick was sacked 6 times against Utah Tech. The same Utah Tech that was a one-win team last year. And Utah Tech looked very loose, underdog-like, a very confident group, very confident defensive bunch, obviously getting to the quarterback. And, you know, UC Davis can sometimes give you a game like that where they're supposed to win. Sometimes they, you could say you're playing down to your opponent, and not saying Utah Tech will be the same as they were last year. But that's a game they should win easily on the road. But that was not the case. But a win is still a win for the Aggies, and they're ranked number 5 in the country. When we return, we'll have some previews for week 2. This is the FCS Report podcast. Here are the top 5 matchups we want to take a closer look at for week 2. We want to begin in the West Coast. And this is not a top tier game, but this could be a bit of an undercard possible upset in the FCS. I'm not calling it. I'm saying it's possible. Weber State at Arizona. Now, you may say, well, Weber State's been kind of down the last couple of years in the Big Sky. You're correct. This is the third year from Mickey Mentor's group and at Weber State, and they have not been what they have been projected to be offensively. They have been underwhelming at best. They were 4-8 last year. They were bottom tier on the offensive categories, passing and running the football, and they need a spark. They lost the opening game against James Madison, the former FCS friends, now in the Sun Belt Conference these days, in their third year in the FBS level, and they're playing an Arizona team that is still trying to get their groove back post Jed Fish. Jed Fish now is at Washington in the Big Ten now, and Brent Brennan's in the second year in Tucson, and it's not been what he may have wanted to be up to this current point. You inherited Noah Fifita, who had a really good redshirt freshman / redshirt sophomore campaign, even though they weren't winning very well, but they were exciting under Jed Fish. And then Brent Brennan comes in, and last year under first-year OC Dino Babers, and the offense was not what it was supposed to be. You had a first-round pick in Terrell McMillan now playing with the Panthers, and the offense looked basically one side of the field looking towards T-Mac last year, and it led to be a very uneasy offense at best in the first year for Brent Brennan. Also, case in point, Arizona played in week 2 last year another Big Sky team, Northern Arizona, and they squeezed out a 22-10 win last year. Now, I understand different year, different team, different players, different coaches, but this is still week 2. And Arizona, as history would show it, did not look impressive week 2 last year. They did not look impressive week 1 this year. So, unless we see a complete onslaught from Arizona, I'm not going to say that it will be a onslaught for the Wildcats. I do think Weber State may have a chance if their offense is able to rebound after only showing 10 points last week in Virginia. They can have a chance if they can hold up against this Arizona offense that's still looking for their blowout game. And there's an opportunity there. There is a prime opportunity in prime time in Arizona. It's going to be less of a heat wave in Tucson later at night. 8 o'clock Mountain Time kick. So you can't say it's going to be a heat issue per se, but there's an opportunity for the Wildcats of Weber State if they play their cards right and if their offense can live up to par for Mickey Mentor's group. Okay, that's our first matchup we want to look at. Our second one that I'm really surprised about, it could have been my first matchup I really want to look at, but I'll make it my second one. Top three teams is South Dakota State and Montana State, number two versus number three. Now, you had the Jackrabbits who beat Sacramento State last week in a bit of a slugfest in Brookings, and this will be a different component. You face number three Montana State, and they're upset. They got embarrassed in Eugene against number six in the FBS, Oregon Ducks. You have two teams that are in different perspectives right now. You have South Dakota State trying to find their groove. You're trying to protect your quarterback, Chase Mason, that was sacked seven times against the Horns of Sacramento State. You're having Montana State coming in to Bozeman against the Jackrabbits, coming off a tough defeat, which you had a team low in many a year. In a single game, 46 rushing yards. Adam Jones was non-existent. Justin Lampson was pedestrian. The one bright spot for the Montana State Bobcats, their receiver, the All-American FCS, is Taco Dowler. A career-high 12 receptions coming into the Oregon game last week. In his career, he had 42 receptions. He had 12 in one game. So an impressive performance for him, and he's a preseason all Big Sky selection and a possible All-American selection again this year. But if Montana State is going to win, they're going to have a better performance on the ground 100%. They can't have 50 yards rushing and expect to have a good game at home. I expect them to do much better up in Bozeman. I look to see to have a big game from Adam Jones and the running back group on their home turf. The last win came against South Dakota State was at home in the 2021 FCS playoffs. So that's 4 years you're saying you're due. If you're Dan Jackson's group for the Jackrabbits, kind of a similar thing, even though you had a win in week one, can your offense be more balanced? You had a really nice game from the former Fordham transfer, Houston native Julius Loughridge, had a really good game on the ground, 150 yards rushing against the Hornets, and you know you want to kind of offset him to give him a breather every now and again, and look for Logan Ogroski, the Minnesota native who is. Could be their receiver one, the sophomore standout from Minnesota. Looked for him down the field to be a big-time threat for Chase Mason. I'm going to say, if I'm going to call it right now, I'm picking the Jackrabbits on the road. I like Dan Jackson's group. I like their defense. And I'm not buying Montana State right now. I know it's early. It's week two, and it's a very small sample size for Justin Lampson. But for some reason, I'm just feeling the Jackrabbit rave right now. I'm really feeling the Missouri Valley Conference runner-up in this one. Number two versus number three matchup here in week two. Up in the Pacific Northwest, Montana begins their campaign against a D2 Central Washington foe. This is the seventh year for Bobby Houck and his second stint in Missoula, 14 years in totality. The winningest coach in the Big Sky, and he has a new quarterback, somewhat. Kealia Ayotte, the redshirt sophomore from Hawaii, will call the signals this year in 2025 for the Grizzlies. He saw some playing time last year between him and Logan Fife, and he'll be QB1 for Bobby Hawk's group against a very competitive Wildcat group. This is a 10-win team for the Wildcats out of Central Washington. I understand they're D2, and this game might get ugly early, but don't count the Wildcats out. This could be a game going into the third quarter if Montana is playing with their food, but we'll have to see. I like Montana. They're ranked number 10 in the country right now. I see them winning at home to open the year in week two. Number four, I'm not calling this an upset, but I'm curious about this game. Northern Iowa at Wyoming. Now, I know Wyoming has had better days, and they've had some losses against FCS teams in the past, but I'm curious to see how Northern Iowa looks with under head coach Tom Sepsis, who comes over from Drake. Wyoming has been up and down the last few years, and you're in high elevation. Can Northern Iowa, you know, just find a way to hang around? And I'm curious to see how they look. Last year just wasn't their year. It didn't look good. It was a tough start, and let's see if new blood can revamp a very proud UNI program. My last matchup I want to look at, and this is just for my own personal, because I've seen this team already once before, Robert Morris. They're on the road against Youngstown State, the Penguins, Doug Phillips' group, and they have a really good quarterback and Bo Brungard. He was all Missouri Valley Conference player last year, 2,000 yards passing and 1,000-yard rusher on the ground as a quarterback, a true dual-threat QB in the pistol. You know, they were 4-8, but they were exciting last year. They could score some points, but their defense, not so much. I do want to see a better performance from Zach Tanner. He's a southpaw, has a really nice arm. When he's able to get it going, get in rhythm. Yes, I understand you're playing West Virginia. I understand that. But I do think there is some talent there in Pittsburgh for Coach Bernard Clark. Their defense was fantastic for three quarters. They held a Big 12 team to 10 points for 2.5-plus quarters. They just ran out of gas. And you can't keep teams just at bay for that long and you're not scoring points. Eventually the dam will break, and the dam broke in Morgantown last week. If the Colonials can get into a rhythm offensively, it will give the defense much more confidence. They forced four mistakes and almost had four turnovers gained. They had three of them last week, and you can imagine what that could that confidence will give a defensive unit like that, and wish a team that was not a defensive savvy group last year. This could be an identity switch. And Coach Bernard Clark said last week that we have to, in his words, quote, we have to man up. And for a good half, that team on the other side of the ball was manning up pretty well. And I'm sure that will go a long way in the NEC conference play this year. I'd like Robert Morris to find a way on the road in Ohio to get a win and get on the right track to move to 1-1 going to week three. I think this team can make some noise, and this might be a sneaky playoff run team. You never know what could happen, but you have to get the first win. I really think Robert Morris might make some noise, but it has to begin with going back on the road to upstate Ohio and beating a Youngstown Penguin group that is exciting to watch. And that was our top five matchups of week one. We hope that you enjoyed this podcast this week. Stick around for next week where we recap all the games from week two. This has been the FCS Report Podcast. Y'all are saying so long to you. We'll talk to you on Monday.